Well, welcome to episode 23 of the Tim Topham TV Piano Teaching Podcast. Great to have you with me again for today's episode. Wherever you are around the world and whatever you're doing, it's fantastic to have you here again. And thank you so much for joining me. It's almost, we're kind of coming up to the end of the year, and I can't believe I've been doing this for the most part of this year actually already, and we're over 20 episodes already. Thank you very much for all your support. And I hope you like today's episode, which is a little bit different because it's just you and me today. So we'll have a great time together. We're going to be talking about teaching teens, and I'm going to be giving you my 5 tips for teaching teens. Now, this is hopefully going to be relevant to anyone, actually, whether you're teaching teenagers or not, because a number of the things that I talk about and I believe in regard to teaching teenagers are actually relevant to teaching students of other ages too. But certainly the focus is on teenagers today. And by teenagers, you can pretty much include adults in that mix too, because a lot of the strategies that you use with teenagers are going to resonate with adults as well. Or vice versa, the things you would use with adults are going to resonate with teenagers. So I think the real cutoff for me in regard to the kind of practices I use is probably around the 11 years old mark, 11 to 12. I start thinking about actually what kind of methods I'm going to use and how that might be different. So when I'm teaching younger beginners, so, you know, 10, 9, 8, 7 year olds, I don't tend to teach much younger than that, but there's obviously nothing wrong with doing that. It's just not something that I'm all that confident with. And I think it takes a special person sometimes to teach 4 and 5 year olds. And it's fantastic. You know, I love hearing the fantastic games people play and the creative things they do when they've got kids that really aren't ready to sit still for much longer than about a minute at the piano, or perhaps a little bit longer. So that's probably, you know, that's someone else's gig, and maybe this topic of a future podcast episode now that I'm thinking about it. But yeah, today's focus is on, you know, those kids who are a little bit older. But if I do teach sort of 7, 8 year old beginners, I tend to I always use a very chordal method when I'm teaching, even right from the beginning. So I will introduce chords quite early on, depending on how they can cope with it with their hand size and coordination. And I would tend to use a method, and I do like the Piano Adventures method. That's just something that I've become quite attuned to. But even more recently, I've really enjoyed the Piano Pronto method by Jennifer Eklund. And if you haven't explored that, then I would 100% recommend you do. And I love that for teenagers too. So that actually works for me, works for all ages. But if you're looking for something with more with the kind of pictures and the stories and things like that, then Piano Adventures, Accelerated Piano Adventures is good, and the normal Piano Adventures. But look, there's lots out there. You've got to decide on what you like. Hal Leonard have a fantastic series. You know, there's lots of them out there. But that's not what today's about. Today's about 5 tips for teaching teenagers. And look, the first one I want to get into is the thing that you've got to do before you start teaching a teenager. Don't start unless you know why they want to learn the piano in the first place. You know, if they come at it because they're being forced to by their parents for some reason, are they wanting to, you know, be able to show off to their mates, play something in front of their friends at school that's kind of cool and just kind of dabble around a bit? Or are they, you know, just desperate to be able to play something that they saw in a movie the other day? Or are they really committed to learning in depth about music and seeing it maybe as a career potential? Or, you know, are they, you know, already making beats in their bedroom using GarageBand and they just want to know a little bit more about it? Whatever it is, you've got to find it out, because you've got to start somewhere before you can work out where you're actually going to go, in my opinion. You've got to know where you are on a journey before you can work out where you want to go to. You know, so if you, you know, you're taking on a student who is already playing a fair bit on YouTube, let's say he or she has studied a lot of tutorials and already can play some stuff that sounds pretty cool, they're going to struggle if you, you know, head back to Alfred's Primer Book A and force them to do something that's really, you know, really, really basic. Now, that's not to say that you shouldn't do that with them if they need to learn to read music and they would like to do that. But what's not going to work is if you just teach them as if they were a 7-year-old, and it's just like, nah, this is my method, this works with everyone, I'm going to teach this. It just doesn't happen that way. When I'm approaching, you know, reading with teenagers, the first thing I do is get them on side. If they're not going to be interested in learning to read, you are not going to win. Like, you've got to get them on side. And you can tell them all the fantastic things and opportunities you can get from knowing how to read music. But hopefully they'll understand that it's, you know, a standard part of a musical education. And I don't think I've ever had a student that's just point blank refused to learn to read music. They understand that it's a good thing to do. And I've taken on plenty of teenagers who can play at quite a high level but can't read. And the way I go about introducing reading, because it by necessity has to be very basic, you have to learn, in the case of this, to crawl before you can walk, before you can run. I make light of it. It's like, hey, you know, we've got to learn some music together. We're going to have a bit of fun. It's really, really simple, but I'm going to play along with you to make it a bit more interesting. And there's this cool backing track we're going to put on. But I understand it. It looks a bit simple, but you know, the faster you get through this and the more you practice and work at it, the faster we can get onto some cooler stuff. So that's kind of the way I approach it with my teenagers. I think one of the things that most teenagers also want to do is be able to play something cool that everyone knows. And that's why YouTube tutorials have become so popular. And I know some teachers out there will be groaning. It's like, oh God, YouTube, bane of my teaching existence. But look, there's a lot of good to be said for the kids that are learning stuff on YouTube. If they're getting inspired and interested in playing music, then, why shouldn't we be encouraging that? Sure, it shouldn't be the only thing that they're doing, if they're having lessons, that is. But there's nothing wrong with them, you know, playing something that's out of their reach by just copying someone online, as long as it's just a part of your program of study. And we all know that students get a huge buzz from being able to play something cool that everybody knows. And so if you're interested in sort of how I approach that, then make sure you check out my article about the top 10 pop songs that I teach piano students. You can get the list and you can get a download there that you can have right on the piano that just kind of reminds you of those pieces and the chord progressions and things like that and how I teach them. Because that can be a great way to just while they're learning to read, and you know, that skill isn't all that interesting, have on the side, keep them ticking over with some cool stuff that is relevant to them and that they'll like. We'll talk a bit more about relevance later on. Another thing you've got to do, this is my still part of tip one, is to find out as much as you can about your student. You know, what do they do for fun on the weekends? And where do they go for holidays? What do they watch on TV? What's their favorite movies and video games? You know, I've found out before things about my students that, you know, I should have found out really early on, you know, that one of them is into filmmaking. And this is one of my current students, hugely into filmmaking, loves acting as well. And he has a mate who he got on to help him score one of his short films. And this other student has been playing piano for him. And so we pulled apart what the other student had made. And I was trying to teach him some of the concepts behind it. No, I wouldn't have known that if I hadn't learned something about this student. So, you know, of course, having a good connection with your students goes without saying. But I think particularly for teenagers, you know, that relationship that you have with them is so, so important, because you can find out so much about them. Find out about their hobbies and know about them and appreciate them. And, you know, kids love nothing more than when you remember that they actually had this massive ballet competition on the weekend, and their next lesson you ask them, hey, you know, how did the ballet thing go? Or how did the sport final go that you played last Saturday? I'd love to hear about it. Making those kind of connections are so important, but you need to ask the questions at the start to start building a bit of a relationship with them. Find out what they listen to. Like, one of the first questions I'll ask, and I'll actually ask my students quite regularly through the year, if I need some inspiration, what are you listening to at the moment? And, you know, how many students come in with headphones on these days to your lessons, or hanging out the top of their shirt? It's pretty common these days. You know, kids everywhere have earphones in all the time, it seems. If I ask them what they're listening to, or, you know, if they're happy to, ask them to show them your iPhone, show you their iPhone, and have a scroll through, see what they're actually listening to. They might well be. I'm often surprised. You know, teenagers these days like, things that their parents like, don't they? So they might quite like some old Beatles stuff that you would just love to teach them. Of course, they might also like hip hop and death metal, which is a little bit harder to teach on piano. But you know, there we go. Now, if a student talks about music that they like and you've got no idea about it, then do make sure you take the time to ask them a little bit more about it. Maybe even have a listen to a tiny bit of it on YouTube. Again, you're sharing a relation, building a relationship, and you're sharing things with your students. Maybe they say that their top thing they like doing is badminton. And you've got no idea how that works. Ask them a little bit about it. How does it work? How long have they been playing for? You know, just keep finding out things about your student, particularly when they're teenagers, because one, they'll love the relationship building, but two, you'll be able to hopefully make some connections, which I'll talk about in a moment, between their hobbies and their piano. Okay, my step number two, or my top tip number two, is to be flexible. Teenagers aren't going to fit into the structures that you use to teach 7 or 8 year olds. I reckon teenagers tend to fall into about 3 categories as a kind of the musical person that they are. You've got people who love to compose. So these kids will just naturally make up things on the piano. Now, whether they're good or bad doesn't really matter, but you know, they're curious and they explore sounds, and they'll come back to each lesson with some new amazing thing. They probably won't have practiced anything you've asked them to, but they've composed this great new piece of music. You know, that can be hard, but we've got to encourage that kind of thing. So composers, they're one type of teen student that I've seen a lot of. Second one are the YouTubers, right? These kids that can play pretty complex stuff but have no idea of the background or the music reading side of things. They've learned everything on YouTube. And you've got readers. Sometimes you'll take on a teenager who perhaps have had some lessons, taught themselves to read music, but I don't think I've ever come across that before. I'd be interested to hear if any of you guys have ever had a teenager come along that has taught themselves to read. It's pretty rare, I think. But sometimes you'll get a music reader. And perhaps some, you know, students that are interested in the classical music and are already playing those things. You know, we've got to cater for those different types. And if they enjoy making up music, if they're a composer and all you do is force them to read music and don't give them any time to work on any composition with you, then you're going to lose them. And if you take on a YouTuber and you ban them from playing your YouTube stuff, well, they're going to do it anyway. But two, they're going to lose respect for you and you're going to break some of that relationship. For anyone that fits the first two categories, the YouTubers and the composers, when you introduce note reading, just make it a small part of the lesson. Build it up. If you take one of those two guys or girls and you just go straight into music reading for a month, and nothing else, you're going to lose them. You've got to really be flexible and you've got to work with students, particularly when they are teenagers. And look, I probably don't need to say it, but I will. Make sure that if you have a teen composer or YouTuber, or even someone that's learning to read music, don't get them to play, you know, a baby-ish beginner music reading piece at a recital just because you think that they should play something that they've learnt to read rather than something they've learnt on YouTube. It will do so much more damage than good. Let them play something that they want to at a recital. They can play plenty of note reading pieces to you at another stage. And the same goes for performances at school assemblies and things like that. I often, in fact, joke when students are learning to read music and they're a teenager, I'll say, you know what, we're going to play this one again. It only uses 2 fingers in the right hand. And I want you to, you know, perform it right now. It's going to be fantastic and I'm looking forward to hearing it. But you know what, we're not going to play this in front of school assembly. You don't have to play it to 2,000 people or anything. It's just for you and me. So let's just have a little bit of fun with it and enjoy it. And I think it's really important that teenagers in particular understand that they're not going to be asked to perform these things in front of thousands of people, okay? Let them play the cool stuff for the recitals. And my last point in regard to flexibility and being flexible, my second tip, is if something's not working, just change the activity and change it fast. I've had my fair share of epic failures when it comes to teaching, you know, all ages, but particularly teenagers, because I'll keep trying new things. We might try and learn a piece of music that they've really wanted to try out with me. And, you know, it just, perhaps it just doesn't even work. And you just got to put up your hand and go, you know what? I don't think this is working. Let's go on with something else. Keep changing it. Make light of, you know, the fact that something didn't work. They'll respect you for that. And just move on to something different. So you're going to, perhaps more for teenagers than for young students, you're going to have to keep a number of activities on the go at the same time. Okay, tip number three, be cool. All right, you've got to build rapport and learn to laugh at yourself. Students learn from teachers they like, and this goes for boys in particular. I've said before that boys are relational learners. They learn from teachers that they like. So if you really want to get on side with teenagers, building rapport is so, so important. And I really can't emphasize that enough. So my kind of tips here are, be the teacher that encourages your students to play what they want from time to time. It doesn't mean you've got to do it all the time, but make sure you're encouraging their own interests in the kind of music that they want to learn. And you've heard me say this before when I've talked about video game music and pop music and whatever else. You know, don't blacklist any of that kind of music just because you don't like it or you don't think there's merit in it. Support and encourage it, and they are far more likely to then go and do what you want them to do or what they know they have to do, i.e. music reading or rhythm tapping or whatever it is. So I love to encourage music students to bring in music that they want to play. I've already kind of said that. You know, and it might be way too hard for them. It might be something that you don't like. Too bad. You just get on and do it, because they are going to love the fact that you're helping them out with that kind of music. So another thing about being cool is to have a sense of humor. Nothing kills rapport with teens faster than an old fuddy-duddy, all right? Now, regardless of your age, it really doesn't matter. You know, I've met very, very cool, trendy 60-year-old teachers as much as I've met, you know, quite boring, dull 20-year-olds, right? It's not an age-related thing. And some of the tips that I've just given you will really help, I think, for you to make that connection and be the fun, reasonable, but still, you know, respected teacher that you need to really get the most out of teenagers. So I think one of the things that students love is for when you share some of your life with them. Share things that happen. Let them know about the kind of music that you like. Some of my students have taken on things that I quite like just because I've gone, hey, I really like this piece. I think you'll like it. Try and here's how it sounds. And they're like, whoa, that's fantastic. As you get to know your students, of course, you'll get better at picking music for them. You know, do you have an interesting hobby? Do you like some sport or video games even? If you do, share them with them, because they might have something in common, and that will create a fantastic connection. And when it comes to humor, like, we all know how tiring piano teaching is. That one-on-one connection is one of the most exhausting forms of teaching that I've ever done. And even when you feel completely shattered, is that an Australian term? I'm not sure. Shattered, stuffed at the end of the day. Keep your humor up as much as you can and make sure you keep inspiring and you're still enthusiastic, all right? That will be make such a difference for the students. And look, I know that, you know, some students and teenagers are particularly good at really challenging teachers sometimes. You know, they'll come in and they'll be like, you know, they're tired from their day of work or their school or whatever it is. Or sometimes, regardless of how incredibly inspiring and motivational you are, they still are just like, I'll learn that. You know, they'll do the bare minimum. And you're there like, going, oh, this is amazing. I love this piece of music. It's so good. And you've done a great job. And let's, I know what it's like. I've had students like that just give you nothing back in return. But look, keep at it. You'll be amazed sometimes what happens when, you know, you make these efforts with these kids who are really struggling, and suddenly a couple of years down the track, they'll either turn the corner or you'll just get a note from them or something, a gift or you know, whatever it is, and they'll thank you for it. Of course, there's those few occasions, I think we've all had them, where sometimes students who are like that eventually quit. And, you know, that's okay too. It's not going to be right for everyone. Now, one other thing with being cool, and look, I know that in educational circles, being a cool teacher isn't kind of the right way to describe it, I guess, because you don't want to be everyone's mate, although it's easier in the one-on-one context than in a classroom, of course. But you just want to have that connection, I think. And by being cool, I just mean being down to earth and reasonable and, as I've said, laughing at yourself and things. One thing you can do is keep abreast of current music as much as you can, and teen culture, I guess. You know, find out and try and remember what, particularly if you teach boys, what's the current video game? What's the video game that's just come out and everyone is playing? You know, and you can just, you know, as an offhand little comment, go, I heard that new FIFA soccer game's just come out or something. And if, you know, if that's a little bit unexpected, the kids will love it if they're playing it. When it comes to the pop music too, you can always just jump very quickly on YouTube and just Google top 10 hits December, let's say USA or UK or Australia or Canada, whatever it is. And you'll get a list of the current top 10 songs, and often they're all in one YouTube and they'll be segmented. So you can just click through and just have a listen to the first minute of each of those songs. Get a feeling for what it is. You'll probably groan at a lot of it. A lot of it could be quite rubbish going by a lot of the current popular music, things that pass for popular music these days. But, you know, get a you know, used to it, and find out too what movies have been coming out, because often students love playing themes from movies, and there's some pretty cool stuff out there too. Okay, my next tip: be relevant. Connect with your students' lives, and particularly technology. So one of the things that I do to connect with students' lives, when it comes to something like practice, for example, find out what sport your student plays, if they do. If they do, let's say it's an individual pursuit like tennis. You can make a very clear and very relatable metaphor between practice and sports. When you relate practice as being the thing you have to do on a tennis court, let's say, when you've just you're facing a ball machine and you're just hitting right, yeah, forehands, and you're just going over and over the forehand technique, and then you're just doing backhands after backhand. The thing students don't sometimes understand is that when it comes to practicing an instrument, playing a game, which is the equivalent of, playing a tennis match, let's say, from start to finish, is the equivalent of playing a piece of music from start to finish. Ask them, you know, how often do you actually play a game in training? Most of them will say never or very rarely. And so that's where you can make that great connection between just hitting over and over forehands, or, you know, doing drills or lifting weights or whatever it is, to that kind of boring, repetitious practice that you've got to do in order to play a game successfully. On the piano, you've got to do your scales, you've got to break up your pieces into little bits and practice them over and over again in order to play the game, which is to perform the whole piece. So I like making connections between sport and music. Works fantastically well for boys, certainly for girls too, and it's a great connection for teenagers because they all get it. When it comes to technical exercises too, I love asking my students why I'm getting them to play a scale. Can they actually tell me why they think I'm forcing them to do this rather boring, monotonous work? This is fantastic if they don't do their scales. And make sure you've got a convincing argument for why they can't, because some of them will say, oh, I don't know, and they'll just be doing it or not doing it, probably because they don't understand why they should be doing it. Have a convincing argument for it. Is it for you? Is it about speed and agility at the keyboard? Is it about independence of the fingers? Is it about understanding the harmonic structure of a piece, so you know that if a piece is in G major, you'll be able to run your fingers over G major and remember the F sharps in it. Whatever it is, make sure you can provide a relevant, reasonable answer so students understand why they're doing things. This is so important. You could tell a 7-year-old or 8-year-old to play C major scale over and over again, and they'll never question why they do it. Whether they do it or not, it's another matter, but you know, if they're doing it, they'll do it over and over. A teenager, come 14, 15, you know, why do I have to learn this? And you should be able to create a convincing argument that is more than just because I told you so, or more than just because every pianist in history have played scales, or whatever it is. Make sure it's relevant to them. I think when it comes to scales too, you'll get less pushback if the scale or the technical exercises is related to the work that they're doing. So if you know, if they're playing some music by Hans Zimmer, who's a film music composer, or you know, someone with a lot of octaves, let's say, you know, give them to do some octave practice. Get them to do something related to the music that they're playing, because they'll immediately see the relevance. So don't just use Hannon or A Dozen a Day or whatever it is if that isn't actually related to the music they're playing. And I think for teenagers, you can choose your scales in the keys of the pieces, for example. If they're not doing any particular exams or assessments, create exercises that are based on the challenges in their pieces, use scales in the keys of their pieces, and they'll be much more engaged generally. And there's some pretty cool ways to make scales more fun. I love to use backing tracks. I like to play along with my students. If you have a second piano, that's great. And you've got books like Scales Bootcamp, and there's various apps and, you know, things I've blogged about many times before. Just Google on my site, or maybe we'll put some links in the show notes to how to make piano scales fun, technical work ideas, and a few different things like that that I've got on my site. There's an app I've talked about called Decide Now. I think I've done a post about that. We'll try and find it and pop it in the show notes. And onto technology, now that we're talking about apps. You know, if you don't currently use technology in your studio and you're teaching teenagers or adults, make the time over the Christmas break to get involved in it, because I can guarantee you will not waste a minute of your time or money by investing in some technology and using it in your lessons. Teenagers and children, for that matter, and technology just go together like this, right? So make sure you check out my article, Best iPad Apps for Piano Teachers. It's the most popular post, has been for about 4 years or however long it was since I wrote it. It's I update it all the time with my new finds. Make sure you head there if you're getting an iPad. If you're getting an Android device, I'm not the person to tell you too much about it, because I've committed to iPads and iPhones and iDevices, and I just don't have time to learn another whole system and buy more devices and things. So I'm very sorry if you don't have an iPad. Just get on Google and see what you can find about music recommendations for apps. But you'll know that the last podcast was with Becky Laurent in regard to the Piano Maestro app. It's absolutely fantastic. In my Piano Flicks online training about teaching pop music, I go into detail about Yamaha's NoteStar app. Look, there are so many great things that teenagers just love. Like NoteStar, for example, which provides singers and backing tracks for pop songs, is just fantastic. And there's lots of other ones out there. Chromatic, with a K at the end, is an app that syncs YouTube with on-screen sheet music for pop songs, and allows students to play along with it while the video is up there, or you know, at least the sound if they're not watching the video. There are so many great ways that you can use technology, particularly to inspire teenagers. They just love it. Or everyone loves technology when it comes to learning an instrument, but teenagers in particular, you'll hook them very quickly. Oh, while I think about the word hook, make sure you check out hooktheory.com if you haven't already. I think it's .com online. That is another very cool resource. And I'll put a link to the blog post I wrote about that in the show notes too. Okay, last tip. Tip number 5, be yourself. Not everyone's going to be instantly inspired by teaching teenagers. And just as I have chosen to not teach really young beginners, you may not want to particularly choose to teach teenagers. And you've got to kind of be authentic to yourself and do what you would like to do. But I also know that even in school situations, certainly, but even when you're teaching privately, you may get enrollments from a group of students who don't really, wouldn't be your normal age to teach. And sometimes, you know, it's great to push yourself, try and see how you go. You might find that you're actually fantastic at teaching some older students and teenagers. And look, have fun when you're about it. You know, part of being yourself is to make sure that you're having fun. I love what I do. I love all the students that I teach, even the ones that frustrate me. So, you know, make sure you are looking after yourself as well. Get the rest you need. Make sure you're doing some exercise regularly. And, you know, have a blast teaching. We are so lucky to be able to teach piano or teach music and inspire students in this fantastic art form. I hope that you can really enjoy what you're doing, and hopefully these five tips have been of great help to you. If you're interested in finding out more, I do have an ebook on this. Some of you may have read it already, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. It's all completely free, and it's a summary of what I've talked about today over about 10 pages or thereabouts, so you can read a little bit more in depth about some of these tips. But that'll be there for a download if you'd like to check it out. It's called the Teen Teaching Toolkit. Well, guys, it's been fantastic hanging out with you today. I hope you've enjoyed the episode. If you'd like to find the show notes, they'll be at timtopham.com/episode-23. And as always, if you can leave a review on iTunes, that would be awesome. You can head to timtopham.com/iTunes for the instructions. And finally, if you have some ideas about teaching teenagers, or if something I've said either resonates with you or something I've said really grates with you, please jump on the show notes page, episode 23, and tell me about it down the bottom in the comments. It would be so good to hear from you directly. Signing off now. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to seeing you in episode number 24. Ciao.